Outposts in Sol System, none. Moratrium. Ilathians. Origin, Galaxy NGC 7319 Int Stefan's Quintet Group, visible through the Pegasus constellation. Homeworld, EAL. Species and appearance, winged humanoids. Have been mistaken in the past on Terra Pharyngeals. Culture very active in protection and defense for the Intergalactic Confederation, with a military-type structure. Part of a collective consciousness. Communication, telepathic mainly, but can be vocal if needed when interacting with non-telepathic cultures. Outposts in Sol System, ancient colonies on Titan and Europa. Ilathian. Ormung, origin, Galaxy NGC 7252, visible through the Aquarius constellation. Homeworld, unpronounceable language. Species and appearance, human, 6 FDE tall, brown skin, aquiline face - very slanted eyes. Scientist I met on the Excelsior, when the lunar pods arrived. Communication, vocal and telepathic. Outposts in Sol System, Terra, South America. Working with GFW Armites. Ormung. Eliantsuk Army. Origin, galaxy not yet discovered, visible through the Southern Cross constellation. Species and appearance, feline humanoid, Oron's race. Route race for Lan. Communication, vocal and telepathic. Outposts in Sol System, Terra, North Africa, Asia, East Russia and Inner Earth, Asteroid Belt, Merope/Saturn, Moon Enceladus. Eliantsukum. Krug. Origin, Galaxy NGC 3521, visible through the Leo constellation. Homeworld, Harak. Species and appearance, about 7 to 8 FD tall, brown wrinkled skin, rectangular blue eyes. They have a narrow chest and large hips, long limbs and a long neck. Elongated head with a rectangular top. They have clear blue, rectangular eyes. I met one of them named Geetak on board Thorhan's command ship. Communication, telepathic only. Outposts in Sol System, none. Krug. Ilii, origin, galaxy, and GC 7331, Pegasus Galactic Cluster. Homeworld, Nava. Species and appearance, human, tall blonde, fair skin. Route race for a hill that was seeded in Lyra. Communication, spoken and telepathic. Outposts in Sol System, Terra, Himalayas, Ganymede. Ilii. Acara Mantis. Origin, Galaxy Sombrero M104, visible through the Virgo constellation, and situated 28 million ly from Earth. Species and appearance, insectoid. Multidimensional and multi-density beings. Up to 9 FDE tall, they are classified in three categories, green, white, black. Route race for some Martian insectoids. Masters in the science of vibrational genetics and frequencies, they are able to modify at will the geometrical patterns of the holographic reality. Communication, telepathic only. Hive consciousness. Outposts in Sol System, none. Acara, Mantis. Etherians. Origin, Andromeda Galaxy. Star System, Maru. Homeworld, Etheria. Species and appearance, tall, white skin human. Elongated cranium. Big slanted eyes, large hips. Route race for Keoli Tokert, Etherian Grey Hybrids. Communication, telepathic mainly, but can be vocal when dealing with non-telepathic cultures. Outposts in Sol System, Asteroid Belt. Planetoid Calliope and its moon Linus, Ceres, Saturn. Etherians. Laniel. Origin, Galaxy, and GC 1924, visible through the Orion constellation. Species and appearance, small greys, about 5 FDE tall, with big eyes nearly touching in the middle and very slanted. Route race for some small greys. Communication, telepathic only. Hive consciousness. Outposts in Sol System, none. Laniel. Gemin. Origin, Centaurus, a galaxy, also known as NGC 5128 or Caldwell 77, visible through the Centauri constellation. 16 Emily from Earth. Species and appearance: humanoid, ninth density, with a frequency of a nature similar to radio waves. The particularity of this species is of a very rare occurrence. It is structured in a multitude of subhives where soul groups are interfaced with a seed being, of which they are a fractal of consciousness. To explain it otherwise, this culture spreads throughout a multitude of star systems, in that particular galaxy only. Each of these stars are inhabited in the ninth density by seed beings. They are non-incarnated plasma consciousnesses. These beings split their consciousness into a group of fractal sub-beings, who will all be interfaced with the original seed being that is at the head of his hive group. The sub-beings incarnate on the planets of these star systems, they are in general 9 FDE tall, have blue skin and an elongated cranium. Another strong aspect of these beings is that all fractals of the seed beings are interfaced with the frequency of love. Hence, they are extremely skilled in healing and as well, affecting the holographic grid of the universe. Communication, telepathic only. Seed Hive Society. Outposts in Sol System, none. Gemin. Meroa, Astamar, origin, Speca Galaxy, 1.7 billion light years from Earth. Species and appearance: humanoid, 10 FD tall, silver skin, high forehead. Communication, telepathic only. Outposts in Sol System, none. Meroa Astamar. Nile. Origin, Speca Galaxy, 1.7 billion light years from Earth. Species and appearance: non-human, non-carbon based. They are ninth density luminescent, translucent octopus-like beings. About 10 FT tall. Communication, telepathic only. Outposts in Sol System, none. Nile. Oira, Mauu, origin, Perseus Galaxy, Perseus Galactus Cluster. Homeworld, March. Species and appearance: 7 FT tall humanoids, clear blue skin, black to gray hair. Rautres fatale. The gene seeded first in the Man system, Kepler 62, Lyra constellation, was engineered to adapt to the environmental conditions generated by that particular star's radiations, and the skin color of the first Tali was clear brown. Throughout the further Tal colonization of Nataru, the natural blue skin genetics often re-emerged. Communication, vocal and telepathic. Outposts in Sol System, none. Oira Mauu. O. Origin, Andromeda Galaxy. Species and appearance: plasmic non-incarnated 12th density consciousnesses. Their plasmic structure is crystallized in geometric patterns of light. Live and the stars of a triple system named Osiri. Collective consciousness. Communication, a way that is beyond telepathic and that humans on Earth haven't experienced yet. Secret meeting on the Excelsior. October 26, 2021, I had today a telepathic contact with Thor Han, who was in the office of Ardeana, High Commander of the Battle Station of the Galactic Federation of Worlds in this solar system. Thor Han instantly enabled a visual connection. Present in the room, I could also recognize Anax and Valnek. Anax is the tall, loving Igaroth who looks after me, and who is also a member of the Council of Five. Valnek, of course, was part of the crew who rescued me when I was a child, as I relate in my first book A Gift from the Stars, 2020. At the time, he was a pilot under Thor Han's command. Together with the medic Myra and the young pilot Saladian, they were assigned to rescue missions in the orbit of Earth from the 1970s to the late 1990s. Valnek is not a Pleiadian, but he is of a Kale race from the planet Amok in the star system Epsilon Eridani, 10.5 light years from Earth. It is a very old colony from the Man system, in Lyra. He has no children and he is in partnership with Macaque, a handsome Alpha B Centaurian male whom I have had the privilege of meeting. Valnek and Thor Han are close friends, working together as officers on the battle station of the Galactic Federation of Worlds in this star system. Valnek was still, That day of October 26, 2021, working with the Earth Alliance as responsible for the technology and mechanics supplies for the military facilities on Earth's moon, Luna. Commander officers take their orders directly from the High Command of their unit. Here, the Battle Station Mothership's High Command Radeana, who relays the decisions from the Lower Council of the Galactic Federation of Worlds. As an example, one of Thorhan's assignations is Mission Coordinator, which consists in managing personnel and resources. As a commander, Thorhan receives his orders directly from the High Command Radeana, his direct superior officer. As I mentioned before, they work in three turning shifts. One shift is performed as logistics coordinator, a second shift is for the military duties, and a third shift is dedicated to rest. Following some unfortunate events putting his position in jeopardy, Valnek was transferred to another star system in early December 2021. I believe the most accurate drawing I've ever made of my friend Valnek from Epsilon Eridani is this one, straight after an encounter on January 2, 1996. His slanted, dark indigo eyes impressed me greatly at the time. At the occasion of this meeting on October 26, 2021, Ardeana wanted to dictate a message to me personally. The reason why they didn't beam me up for this occasion was that it is always more accurate if I type a message in real time on my laptop while telepathically connected with sound and visuals, instead of going there, coming back, and then trying to remember it afterwards. As soon as my secured telepathic communication with Thorhan switched on via my implant, I could see and hear what was going on in the room. I had recognized Ardeana's office and saw that she was sitting on the edge of her desk. I could also see, as I mentioned above, Anax and Valnek standing a little further back in the room. There was a tangible heaviness in the air, as when something very serious has just been discussed and everyone makes an abrupt silence when you enter. Well, it was that same feeling that I could sense through Thorhan. I had never seen such a grave expression on the beautiful face of my dear Anax. Valnek had his arms crossed so tightly against his chest that I could see his knuckles white with tension. An angry fire seemed to rage within him. What was going on? When Thorhan mentioned that I was connected, I saw Valnek storm out of the room, as if they freshly had an argument. I had truly no idea what was going on. I would later learn that some young person with whom Valnek was in contact on Earth was found to have enemy programming, betraying his trust. Valnek was advised to accept a relocation to protect his integrity, which he did. By December 2021, Valnek was reassigned to another star system very far away. Anax approached closer to Thorhan, and my viewpoint, that I could see him well. The beautiful Igaroth smiled and I could sense his powerful magnetic aura even through telepathy, because Thorhan was feeling it himself. Anax knows that his loving presence always has a soothing effect on me. My worried thoughts melted like ice in a warm sunlight. Ardeana sat on the edge of her desk, arms crossed, stared at me through the eyes of Thorhan. Her powerful aura always gives me shivers. She addressed me, inviting me to pass on the following message to the people of Earth. Ardeana's message. October 26, 2021. My name is Ardeana, High Commander of the Military Forces of the Galactic Federation of Worlds for this outpost in your star system. I am asking you to remain strong, for the battle is not over yet. Your undergrounds have been cleared. Your moon has been liberated, and all the other places in this star system have been saved from great darkness. Still, on your planet Terra, the last stronghold of evil, as you call it, is what lingers after the battle on the battlefield. It is up to you to let it go. It is up to you to stand up and speak for yourself. The choice is now in your hands. We've liberated the great evil from your planet, it is now up to you to choose freedom, to not remain attached to what lingers after the dark has gone. All beings that were not part of your planet and were working with your dark governments have gone. Now, it is up to you to stand up. This is not our victory, this is yours. We've taken care of anything that was not from your planet. Now, It is up to you to take care of what is of your planet. Stand up for yourselves. Put an end to the mind control. Soar in your individuality, in your power. May your mind be only yours. You do not belong to anyone or anything else than yourself. It is now time that you take your destiny in hands. We have done our work, do not forget to do yours. Stand up, fight, take down the humans who still want to control you. Their great strong support has gone, all the non-terrestrial beings that were supporting them have gone, we've expelled them, we've cleaned their mess. Now, it is up to you to finish the job, because what remains of the job is not ours to do. We facilitated your victory, it is now up to you to put the last stone on the monument of victory. Stand up, speak up for yourselves and refuse mind control and fear, because all of this is an illusion of their power. They have lost. Victory is in your hands. The last part in this great adventure, you are going to play it, and it is now. The Altian emissaries in Ardeana's office. As I was finishing to take note of Ardeana's message, I could suddenly sense, through Thorhan's body, the frequency changing in her office. Someone of a higher vibration was entering the room. Ardeana stood up to welcome the visitors. Two tall white men from the Intergalactic Confederation who seemed to be high officials. Thorhan stepped back respectfully, but maintained his connection with me. Both visitors had very long hair and wore the same creamy white coat and underneath, a large golden belt on the top of a wide-cut suit. One of them wore on his forehead a vertical green glowing gem, resembling an emerald. He seemed to be of a higher rank than the other. All happened very fast. As they started to communicate telepathically with Ardeana in a way that everyone in the room could hear as well, Ardeana threw a sharp look at Thorhan, indicating that he needed to cut contact with me. Thorhan decided instead to leave the office, as I suppose he wanted to keep conversing with me outside on the footbridge. Just as he saluted and turned on his heels to head towards the door, I said to him, "Stop." Thorhan froze and found himself indecisive for a few seconds. It was enough, I knew. I intercepted the telepathic broadcast from the tall white high official for just a second, as it showed a visual of the Hydra Vulgaris creatures that are contained in the poisonous so-called C-19 injections. I surely wanted to hear about this conversation. Ardeana sighed and addressed to me as she spoke to Thorhan. "Stay. I suppose I need to talk to her now." Ardeana's look was intense and bright. "You may listen now to this conversation," she said to me, "and keep it to yourself until we speak further." I acquiesced. Ardeana trusts me because she knows how respectful I am of the rules. My heart shuddered when, unexpectedly, one of the tall white high officials turned to face Thorhan and looked right into his mind with his piercing aquamarine eyes. The green gem at his forehead became luminescent and the official's mind merged straight into mine. I received a high-frequency shock wave, not meant to harm but to probe me. This man needed to know who was listening to this conversation, and of course this was understandable. As soon as he probed my soul, he gently smiled. While he withdrew his mind from mine, he gave me his name, which he didn't wish to disclose at first. I received later on clearance to do so. He had a beautiful name, Tael. I thought these people had no translatable names in our languages, so I was a little confused. "This is my diplomatic name," he replied by telepathy to my silent interrogation. Of course, this was for practical matters. The Tami is the diplomatic language spoken verbally and telepathically in the Galactic Federation of Worlds, and names are necessary to identify everyone. Imagine if Ardeana had to say, "Well, yes, the tall guy with white hair and a green gem on his forehead, who came with the other guy dressed up like him." So, function names are completely incumbent, like Una, which is not her true name but a function title that means the one who comes forward, the first emissary. The being turned his attention back to Ardeana and he spoke in a telepathic encrypted frequential language which broadcasted images, concepts and words. I could hear his soft voice in my head and at the same time see all of the visuals he was delivering. Myself, Thorhan, Anax, and Ardeana were all attuned together with this high official. I realized that Anax was here to officially represent the Council of Five. What I heard from this magnificent tall white man blew my mind. I cannot transcribe accurately the exact words because of the language he was using, which hadn't any proper words. It consisted in series of bundles of information carried on modulating frequency waves. I felt as well a bit dizzy. Nonetheless, here is what I can report. The people of the Intergalactic Confederation, who just arrived in our star system, brought with them a technology able to kill the synthetic Hydra Vulgaris present in the lethal injections that the Earth Cabal has tried to impose on humanity. These intergalactic people, who call themselves the Seeders, or the Founder Races when it comes to Earth's history, are master geneticists. Their scientists are 20,000 years ahead of Earth's sciences, so it didn't take them very long to decode the Nebunana Hydra's genome and find how to kill these nascent Hydra creatures. The solution was in stopping them from regenerating. We know already that, even put through a fine blender for hours, these Hydra microorganisms will not only survive but will regrow a new body with each scattered piece of the original one. Boosted by Nebutech, this evil Hydra creation is synthesized to the point of perfection. We cannot kill them physically, but our intergalactic friends know a way to dislocate their particles to avoid the tissue cells to bind back again and regrow new bodies. And sound can do that. This antidote is based upon a very specific sequence or several sonic frequencies coupled with a particular electromagnetic pulsation, interacting with the flux of the planet's bioelectric field. This exterminates these Hydra creatures once and for all. Everything in this universe is bound by frequencies. The atoms of matter are bound by electromagnetic forces and frequency codes. The fastest the frequency of the pulse that resonates between two particles, and the highest the matter raises in density. When we know the exact mathematical equation of an object, animated with consciousness or not, we can affect it, destroy it or kill it, simply by modifying its frequency. Humans on this Earth elevate their frequency rate slowly and progressively, as part of a natural process of transmutation and evolution. If a drastic change in frequency should occur, it would lethally dislocate our very being. These synthetic nanohydras were meant to alter the human genome by assimilating it to the gray genome in order to interface everyone who has received these Hydra creatures into their bodies to the Nebuhive consciousness. Through the bloodstream, the injected Hydras make their way to the human nervous system, waiting for the signal emitted by the thousands of relay satellites and towers to activate the connection to the Orion Nebula. Fortunately, this will not happen because the Galactic Federation of Worlds cracked the Nebu code and destroyed all of their infrastructure in this star system. Nonetheless, these Hydra creatures remain alive in the bloodstream of millions of people on Earth. So the Seeders set a special technology on board small ships orbiting the Earth, broadcasting specific high frequencies interfaced with electromagnetic radiations of an extremely fine and precise computation, in order to kill the nanohydras. This procedure is not performed on the whole planet at the same time because the radiation would be harmful if broadcast globally. Rather, this is done through short pulsing sequences calibrated on the movements and fluctuations of the Earth's electromagnetic field. It is a very precise science, almost surgical. Therefore, sometimes the most sensitive of humans can perceive this frequency as a high-pitched ringing in the head. You think you hear it in your ears, but in fact you sense it in your head as it goes through you. Notice that it always comes from a certain direction and moves through you like a wave. So this is what this meeting was about. The Intergalactic Confederation was eradicating the last remnants of the Nebu Gray technology on Earth. Ethically, this procedure is not exactly killing an organic life because these Hydras are synthetically engineered by the Nebu. These Hydras are artificial life forms without consciousness, without souls, and are non-sentient. There are strict rules regarding the non-interference of the technological and conscious development of a species. The aliens take care of the aliens, and the humans take care of the humans. This is a law by which we must abide. In deference to the Prime Directive, All advanced civilizations are obligated to assist the more primitive worlds assaulted by other off-world civilizations, but there are strict rules regarding to the non-interference in the technological and conscious development of a species. VETs, such as the Galactic Federation of Worlds, are tasked with removing ET interference, but ethically, they leave it up to the liberated planetary culture to deal with their own planetary affairs. As Ardiana has stated, it is now up to the Terrans to do their part of the job. It would be a terrible inference for the Galactics to remove certain world leaders and change the structure of some governments, for instance. What would be the long-term benefit of this? In the short term, it would improve a global situation. But in the long term, it would take away our sovereign power and free will. We wouldn't learn from the challenge, and so we would likely fall for it again when the next dictator appeared. In an abusive relationship, no one except the victim can put an end to his or her suffering. No one can do the growing and awakening for another. When we wake up and embrace the courage to face our enemy, we discover our power and potential. This will never happen if we are saved by an outside force, unless an emergency rescue is the only solution to an extreme and life-threatening situation. We have to repeat our mistakes over and over in order to eventually come out of our shell. Humanity must take responsibility for itself, or humanity can never grow. The current crisis on Terra is an opportunity for humanity to learn about its own weakness and strengths. A child will never learn if his parents do all of his homework for him. With all their love and good intentions, the Galactic Federation of Worlds and other benevolent galactic and intergalactic groups cannot do this last step for us. Humanity must not miss this opportunity to rise up and exclaim loudly, "I do not consent." When we stop feeding the beast, it dies. Even its mark eventually fades with time. The negative extraterrestrial threat is gone. Now, humanity of Earth is like a bird who lived in a cage for all of its life. Suddenly, someone opens the door of the cage. Will the bird fly away? Many of you wonder and ponder this same question. When will the good ETs manifest themselves openly to the public? Because unfortunately, a lot of people want to rely upon outside help, praying that good ETs are going to come and save them. The savior complex has been purposely embedded into the consciousness of humanity, mainly by means of religion, to take our power away and transform us into passive, obedient slaves. The truth is, the Galactics are helping us already, mainly by helping us getting us rid of the alien threat. The Galactic Federation of Worlds has been working with the US Navy since the early 1950s to build a secret space defense fleet, for example. Our positive galactic allies have opened the door of our birdcage, but they cannot flap our wings for us. We must overcome the savior syndrome that has been conditioned in humanity through toxic religions using fear and guilt for millennia. The time to kneel is over. It is time to stand up, humans of Earth. It is time to embrace who you truly are. And you are quite exceptional. When the tall white spokesman from the Intergalactic Confederation ended his communication, a deep silence filled the room. Then Ardiana addressed me again, this time directly by telepathy via Thorhan. "There is a danger," she said, "in letting the Terrans know about this. Be extremely mindful in the way you are going to deliver this information. I know you are now undergoing a certain emotion, Elena, eager to tell the inhabitants of this planet that the Intergalactic Confederation is terminating the Nebu Microhydras. These are positive news that can carry a great harm." "How?" I asked. "By receiving this information, many people on this planet below will think it is then safe to get injected with this enemy technology. It is not. Terrans are still put under pressure to get the bioweapon administered to them. The Nebu are gone, but the Terran dark organizations who are working with them rush now to play their last chance to assimilate the populations for their own benefit. They know it is against common rights to force the Terrans to do it, so they influence them by fear and restrictions to surrender of their own free will. A lot of people give up, exhausted. Learning about the help from the Intergalactic Confederation must not become an excuse to stop fighting. Do you understand? This is the danger. Even if the synthetic hydras are deactivated, the substance remains highly harmful to human biology. This injection contains the tracker dust that was meant to relay the connection from the Hydras to the Nebuhive Queen consciousness, and that remains a very harmful substance when inside of a biological carbon-based organism. The tracker dust! I exclaimed.